Good day, and welcome to the Umpqua Holdings Corporation first quarter earnings call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Mr. Ron Farnsworth, Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today on our first quarter 2015 earnings call. With me this morning are Ray Davis, the President and CEO of Umpqua Holdings Corporation, Court O'Haver, our President of Commercial Banking, Greg Siebley, our President of Consumer Banking, and Mark Wardlow, our Chief Credit Officer. Court, Greg, and Mark will join us as we take your questions after our prepared remarks. Yesterday afternoon, we issued an earnings release discussing our first quarter 2015 results. We have also prepared a slide presentation, which we will refer to during our remarks this morning. Both of these materials can be found on our website at umpquabank.com under the Ask Us Investor Relations section. During today's call, we may make forward-looking statements, which are subject to risks and uncertainties and are intended to be covered by the safe harbor provisions of federal securities law. For a list of factors that may cause actual results to differ materially from expectations, please refer to page 2 of our earnings conference call presentation, as well as the disclosures contained within our SEC filings. I will now turn the call over to Ray Davis.
Okay, thanks, Ron. As we've reported over the last few quarters, our company's focus has been on completing the integration of Umpqua and Sterling, including converting all systems and capturing the remaining cost synergies, while we continue to generate strong organic growth. We have made good progress on both, although the financial benefit of that progress was not fully reflected in the current quarter's operating results. I will discuss both of these in greater detail in just a few moments. For the quarter, we reported operating earnings of $56.4 million, which equates to 26 cents per share, compared to the 27 cents per share we earned in the fourth quarter of 2014 and 21 cents per share over the same period a year ago. Ron will go through our financial results in more detail, but I want to outline the key items that impacted our first quarter financial results. First, although loan growth was strong in the first quarter, net interest income decreased by $11 million from the prior quarter. Over half of the decrease related to lower credit discount accretion, with the remaining portion primarily coming from two fewer days of interest income in the quarter. This is not to be a surprise, as we have guided expectations to steady decreases in the credit discount accretion over time. Second, the provision for loan and lease losses was higher by $8.5 million from the prior quarter. This increase was due to stronger loan growth during the first quarter and from increased charge-offs on a quarter-over-quarter basis. Third, we benefited from a decline in the 10-year Treasury in the early part of the quarter, which drove an increase in mortgage refinances. That, combined with a 70-basis-point improvement in our gain-on-sale margin, contributed to an $11.7 million increase in the mortgage banking revenue. Embedded in this increase is a $1.5 million higher charge on the fair value of the MSR, given the decrease in the 10-year towards the end of the quarter. Fourth, core non-interest expense decreased by just under $2 million as compared to the fourth quarter of 2014. This is an important part of the story, and Ron will walk you through the detailed pieces during his comments. Turning back to integration, over this past weekend, we completed the conversion of our core banking systems. I want to again congratulate our teams as they successfully completed 18 separate conversions. This accomplishment is and was the major hurdle that we have now crossed in wrapping up the Sterling integration. This event enables a company to quickly realize the remaining projected expense synergies and benefit from the flexibility that operating on one technology platform provides, especially for a company like Umpqua, where innovation is a major differentiator. Last quarter, you may remember we discussed the new initiatives we are putting in place to leverage our lending power and market position, and why we were optimistic for stronger growth in 2015. The success and momentum of these initiatives are beginning to have a meaningful positive impact on our loan growth. During the first quarter of 15, our loan and lease portfolio increased by $294 million, or 8% annualized growth, before loan sales. Net of loan sales, the portfolio increased by $221 million, or 6% annualized. This was driven by growth in both our commercial and consumer divisions, including another very strong quarter from FinPac Leasing. Commercial loan production continued at a strong pace, with production of approximately $690 million in the first quarter. This represents a 15% increase over the production level in the fourth quarter of 2014. Over half of that production occurred in March, and we believe that momentum will carry forward into the second quarter. Our consumer division also experienced a strong quarter with mortgage production of $1.2 billion, a 25% increase from the fourth quarter. Gain on sale margins also improved to 365 basis points, in line with our expectations and guidance on the last quarterly call. Total deposits grew by $330 million from the prior quarter, which represents an annualized growth rate, again, of 8%. This was driven by growth in non-interest-bearing demand accounts, savings accounts, and money market accounts, partially offset by a decline in CDs. Our loan-to-deposit ratio ended the quarter at 90%. As they have historically, our credit quality, capital, and liquidity levels remain strong for the quarter. The ratio of non-performing assets to total assets declined to 36 basis points, down from 43 basis points in the prior quarter. Tangible book value per common share increased to $8.88 from $8.79 in the prior quarter. All of our regulatory capital ratios, which we are now showing under Basel III rules, remain above well-capitalized levels. And as you're aware, we also paid a dividend of 15 cents per share, which represents a yield of about 3.5%. As I mentioned, with the core conversion behind us, we have now shifted our attention to the final stages of integration and realizing the remaining expense synergies, which will help us achieve our short-term goal of reducing our efficiency ratio below 60%. Now let me turn the call over to Ron.
Okay, thanks, Ray. As I go through my detailed quarterly review comments, I will be referring to certain slides from our first quarter presentation deck, which we posted on the investor relations section of OncoBank.com yesterday afternoon, for you to follow along. With that, please turn to the income statement on slide 3 of the presentation. We reported 26 cents per share in operating earnings for the first quarter of 2015. This is down 1 cent per share from 27 cents in the fourth quarter of 2014. As a reminder, operating earnings are defined as earnings available to common shareholders before gains and losses on junior subordinated debentures carried at fair value and merger-related expenses, both net of tax. A few moving parts led to the 1 cent decline this quarter. I'll cover each of these in detail shortly, but at a high level, we had 3 cents of pressure from lower net interest income, and 2 cents of decline from the higher provision for loan losses. Offsetting this was a higher net contribution from our home lending group of 2 cents and 2 cents of benefit from lower operating expenses. Turning towards the bottom of the P&L summary on slide 5, we had $8.5 million of merger expense this quarter after tax. We expect a slightly higher amount for the second quarter related to the core system conversion, with much smaller amounts trailing through year-end. Now turning to slide 6, net interest income decreased by $11 million from the prior quarter level. A little over $6 million of this decline related to lower credit discount accretion from the Sterling deal. The remaining $5 million of decline came simply from 2 fewer days in the quarter. On the Sterling credit discount, a little over half of the $6 million decline was from lower purchased credit-impaired loan payoffs. We've discussed the credit discount accounting now for several quarters and do not expect a significant drop-off, just a steady decline over time, absent an increase in accelerated payoffs. Our total net interest margin declined by 14 basis points from the prior quarter, driven primarily by the lower level of credit discount accretion. Excluding that credit discount accretion, our pro forma margin was 4.19%, down 3 basis points from the 4.22% for Q4. Given the low interest rate environment, along with continued pressure from higher yielding loan payoffs, we, like all banks, expect this pro forma margin to continue to decline at a slow rate in 2015. On slide 7, the provision for loan and lease losses increased by $8.5 million from the prior quarter level. This increase was driven by stronger loan growth in the quarter, which Ray talked about, and a $5.1 million increase in net charge-offs. We expect this to be lower in subsequent quarters. On slide 8, total non-interest income increased by $13.3 million as compared to the fourth quarter level. The biggest driver of this increase was higher mortgage banking revenue, which is broken out on slides 9 and 10. Turning to slide 9, mortgage banking revenue increased by $11.7 million from the prior quarter. As interest rates declined early in the quarter, we were well positioned to benefit from the spike in refinance activity. This led to a $13 million increase in origination and sale revenue. However, with the drop in rates came a $1.5 million increase on the mortgage servicing right asset charge for the quarter. As you will note on slide 10, our gain on sale margin increased 70 basis points as expected to 3.65%. Our application and lock pipelines remain high heading into the traditional purchase season. Now please turn to slide 11. Excluding merger expense, our operating expenses decreased $1.7 million to $179 million for the first quarter. Moving from left to right, you see we had a $5 million increase in variable mortgage expense related to the higher level of production in the quarter. Other expenses, primarily marketing and services, were lower by $3.9 million, and loss on other real estate owned was lower by $1.8 million. In addition, we recognized $1 million in savings in the month of March related to store staff reductions and realignment following the previously completed store consolidations. This represents $12 million on an annualized basis. Recall through December, we had achieved 45% or $39 million of the annualized $87 million synergy target. Add to that this $12 million annualized amount at the end of March, and we have now achieved approximately 59% or $51 million of our stated target. Now that we have completed the core system conversions, we expect realization of the remaining synergies to accelerate over the next two quarters. Turning to the balance sheet on slide 12, note that our interest-bearing cash decreased this quarter to $1.1 billion or just below 5% of total assets. The small decline in cash funded the like increase in investment securities. As we reported in January, our investment portfolio is expected to remain around $2.5 billion for the near term. Our total available liquidity is $7.8 billion. That, combined with a 90% loan-to-deposit ratio, puts us in a good position to fund continued strong organic loan growth. Slide 13 covers the loan portfolio. As Ray highlighted, we saw strong growth in loans this quarter. Gross loans and leases before sales increased by $294 million, which represents an 8% annualized growth rate. During the quarter, we sold $72.8 million of loans, primarily longer-term portfolio residential mortgages. Netting out sales, our growth rate was 6% annualized, up from 2014 levels. With the initiatives mentioned last quarter taking hold and the conversion behind us, we expect stronger commercial and consumer loan growth for the balance of this year. On slide 14, total deposits increased by $330 million from the prior quarter, with strong core deposit growth partially offset by the market preferred runoff of CDs. The cost of interest-bearing deposits remained low at 24 basis points for the first quarter. Non-interest-bearing demand now comprises 29% of the balances. Please turn to slide 15. As you can see, all of our credit quality ratios remain strong for the first quarter. We expect continued declines in non-performing assets over the balance of the year. Now to slide 16, which covers our capital ratios. Basel III is now in effect. I'll highlight here that our Basel III Tier 1 Common Ratio is estimated at 10.8%, down as expected from the 11.5% under Basel I rules back in December, but up slightly from our previous projections in the low 10% range. All of our regulatory capital ratios remain in excess of well-capitalized levels. We estimate $200 million of excess capital above our internal policy floors. This is good to have, but also recognize this is not a significant amount of excess capital. We will deploy, as we have historically done, in a shareholder-friendly manner over time, through share repurchase, organic growth, dividend increases, or future M&A. Having some excess capital gives us flexibility, which is good. If we were to decide to repurchase shares, it would be done in a ratable manner over a period of time, not in a single move. This gives us the most flexibility in adjusting to changing market conditions. Back in late 2013, when we announced the Sterling deal, we stated our post-integration targets were a return on assets of 1.2 to 1.3%, a return on average tangible equity of 13 to 15%, and our efficiency ratio below 60%. With the completion of integration on the horizon, we are on our way to those targets. Now I'll turn the call back to Ray to wrap up our prepared remarks.
Okay, before we take your questions, just a reminder, our priorities for the near term have not changed. We remain focused on finalizing the remaining pieces of the integration, continued strong organic loan and deposit growth, further optimization of revenues and expenses, leveraging our technology to continue to enhance the customer experience, and improving shareholder returns by managing current capital and deploying excess capital in a prudent manner. We believe we are well positioned in each of these areas and look forward to updating you on our progress over the coming quarters. We'll now pause and take your questions.
And at this time, to ask a question, please press star and the number one on your telephone keypad. Once again, that's star one to ask a question. Take our first question from Jeff Rulis with D.A. Davidson.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff.
Jeff.
Ron, just to go back to the non-interest expense slide, you've got a core expense of $179 in Q1. I guess if you look at the $36 million annualized cost savings yet to be achieved or $9 million a quarter, I guess that implies the run rate's around $170 million a quarter. Is that correct?
Actually, it'd be a bit less than that because also I wanted to stress in here in the first quarter with the store savings of $1 million, that was just for the month of March, which is $12 million annualized or $3 million a quarter, so that'll kick in fully in the second.
So you don't embed that in the cost savings target?
Oh, it's in the cost savings targets, but it's already been achieved. So for the first quarter, there was only $1 million of that reflected in the $179 million of ending expense, but that's $12 million on an annualized basis. So if there's only $1 million for the month of March in the first quarter, it'll be a full $3 million you'll see on that in the second.
Okay. So on a core, really sub-170 is what you're implying?
Yes.
Okay. And then just as you talk about the savings accelerating in the next two quarters, is it lumpy in the form of Q2 should see the bulk of that? And then Q3 is sort of the remainder, or will it be evenly balanced?
Yeah, this is Ray, Jeff. I think you're going to see, a chunk of it in the second quarter and the remaining balance, or the biggest piece perhaps, by the end of third quarter.
Okay, fair enough. And then in the net charge-off category, I guess, were there significant loans in there, fairly granular and maybe within what category, if you could give maybe some color about what was charged off?
Okay, Jeff, this is Mark. Yes, I would say there was a couple of deals that I would categorize as having higher than normal levels of charge-off, but I would also point out that if you look at the rest of our credit metrics, just about every measurement you want to look at, including the NPA ratio, has come down, and as Ron mentioned, we expect continued reductions in NPAs going forward. We also expect that provision expense will come down in subsequent quarters as well.
And, Mark, on the any indication on those charge-offs, did they come from Sterling or Umpqua Legacy?
They were the biggest bulk was a classic Umpqua deal.
Got it. Okay. And maybe one for Ray, just on the appetite on M&A. You've outlined your capital surplus is around $200 million, but given that you're through a conversion, does that change your mentality incrementally quarter to quarter here?
Jeff, I really don't think it changes it. I think we've, even during the, announcement of the transaction, we've been presented deals that we had no interest in looking at, but we're always interested in looking at something that can, strategically fit in with what we're trying to do and make sense. But I think we still have some ways to go on integrating, and we want to wrap this up clearly. But I would not rule out if something hit my desk that we really felt made sense. Would we take a look at it? We would. But I don't. There's nothing imminent, nor do I see anything happening in the near future.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll take our next question from Aaron Deer with Sandler O'Neill & Partners.
Hey. Good morning, everyone. I wanted to touch on the topic of loan growth. It was nice you guys got some acceleration in your organic growth this quarter. Seemed like a lot of it was in the multifamily category and some residential mortgage. I'm wondering, can you talk a little bit about what happened with C&I in the quarter and kind of the outlook for that? And just kind of in general, to the extent that you guys are looking to reposition some of the loan book, how might we see you, step in on the gas in certain categories to get more on the C&I and the consumer side?
Hey, this is Cort, Aaron. Let me talk about the commercial side, and then I'll let Greg comment a little bit on consumer. So in commercial lending, of the 690 in new production, actually 41% of it was in commercial lending. Now, relative to the footings that you see on the balance sheet, we're heavy into ag. And so we had some, if you look at the slight decline that we had in commercial footings, it was really related to ag. And we see that every first quarter, and sometimes it trails early into the second quarter, and then as people get into the planting season, that lifts. But, relative to the total production, commercial was actually pretty good. If you add up the two combined banks' production for the first quarter, we were $10 million more this quarter than the best quarter both banks have posted combined since the Great Recession. So we feel very, very strong about the momentum that we created late last year and all of the disciplines that we've got. So that would be commercial lending, commercial real estate, multifamily, SBA, and FinPAC. Relative to your question around multifamily, obviously with rates coming down slightly in January, actually quite a bit in late January and February, we saw an uptick in some refinance opportunities in multifamily. And we also saw some deals go out the back door, so we had some loans pay off. And so we kind of backfilled with what paid off with a little bit of gross production. We haven't really lifted the overall position of the multifamily in the aggregate on the total portfolio since we closed the deal. It's still sitting at about 17%. We feel pretty good about that. It's a great asset class because we are in all the major metropolitan markets up and down the West Coast. The majority of the loans we do in multifamily are in metro markets. We feel very strong about the asset class. Relative to commercial lending proper going forward, we did do some things in the first quarter, and we'll continue to do some things throughout the balance of the year that should continue to help us grow that C&I portfolio. We opened a new CBC in Torrance. We're new into Southern California with our close on Sterling, so we're happy to have that one open. We added six SBA lenders, including one in Salt Lake City and one in Phoenix, which are new markets for us, and we'll use that kind of as a potential to look at those markets for traditional commercial banking. We're looking at a couple of new initiatives to plug into the bank, one being in FinPAC. We have one particular vertical, as I call it, that we haven't filled yet, but we're very, very close. It would be the vendor. Remember, we have third party. We do bank proper leasing, and then we have a vendor channel that we're looking to round out hopefully very, very soon. That portfolio has grown extensively over the last 2 years. And then we're looking at a new team. I'm not going to say what city because we're actually taking this team from another competitor bank, but we're looking at adding another team in mid-California to maybe closer to Southern California. That should help us with C&I ag type business in Southern California. So a lot of things going on. We feel very, very strong, very, very good about what we did in the first quarter and going to the second, third quarter, which are generally our stronger quarters for commercial banking.
Well, that's encouraging on the commercial side for sure. On the multifamily that was booked in the quarter, and the reason I'm asking is because a lot of the banks that I've talked to recently have suggested that the pricing on that product in particular has just gotten really compressed. Can you talk about what kind of yields those particular loans were coming on at this quarter?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And we see a lot of, I call it goofy pricing and goofy structures, too, to be quite honest with you, Aaron. You know, we're still getting, you know, in the fours. You know, most of our loans, even though they're, you know, 10, 15, 20-year maturities, have five-year resets. So they reprice with a margin over the index in 5 years. So even though they look on our books with a hard maturity that's out there for quite some term, they reprice, you know, in a more reasonable, nearer term. And we're very, very sensitive to the amount of low fixed-rate debt that we put on the books, and we're very, very selective.
Okay. Thanks for taking my questions.
Got it. Thank you.
Take our next question from Joe Morford with RBC Capital Markets.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Good
morning, Joe. Just to circle back on the capital deployment, recognizing you're going to be kind of orderly with it and not do it all at once or whatever, when might we see you move on some of that action, be it, I mean, recognizing organic growth is a top priority, but to the extent you might consider a buyback or something like that, when might we see you look to pursue that?
Oh, hi, it's Ray. I can't give you a date when we're going to start doing it. I can tell you this, though. It's something that we talk about on our regular executive meetings on a regular basis. You know, what is the capital position? What is our best use of the capital today? What are our prospects for it in the near term? So it's evaluated constantly. But for me to give you a date would be very speculative, and I don't want to do that.
Okay. So it's not like there's tied to a certain time of year where you review these actions. It's kind of an ongoing dialogue.
That is correct.
Okay. And then the other question is just curious to learn a little bit more about the drivers to the deposit growth this quarter, which seemed to accelerate and seemed to be a good mix shift as well, but just drivers to that and then how sustainable that may be going forward.
Yeah, Joe, it's Greg. So a couple things on that. First of all, you're right, the mix shift continues to improve up to just under 30% right now in terms of DDA. I think what we're seeing is really an extension of a four-quarter run. If you go back to essentially the first quarter after the deal closed, you've seen nearly $1.2 billion of total growth, about 6.7% last year, about 8% annualized in the first quarter. I think it's just good blocking and tackling, and it's coming out of the stores. It's coming out of the commercial teams as well. I think people are very focused on making sure that our core funding is where we need it to be able to support loan growth. So all oars are in the water on that issue. And, again, to me, this is a very good linked year-over-year quarter for us because typically we'd see numbers that would be a bit more flattish in the first quarter, but I think what you're seeing is the momentum that's been built very intentionally over the course of the last four quarters.
Okay, that's encouraging. Thanks, Greg.
We'll take our next question from Jackie Chimera with KBW.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Morning, Greg.
I wondered if you could touch on mortgage banking. You had a really strong quarter in that and just, you know, how things have been looking this first couple of weeks into the quarter and your expectations as we move forward.
Yeah, Jackie, it's Greg. We feel good. I think if you just look at, again, we had some favorable trends in terms of the 10-year intra-quarter. A little bit of a dip at the end of the quarter that had some impacts on MSR, as Ron said, that we would have preferred not to have had to deal with, but I think we're real well positioned. Again, I'd encourage you to kind of look at the story over time. When the companies first came together year-over-year quarter last year, if you put the companies together, would have been in the mid-$700 million type production, and then that's grown sequentially really every quarter through 2014, and then to just under $1.2 billion here in the first quarter. I think the gentlemen who run our mortgage operation, our top drawer, they've done a very good job of making sure that we're focused around a couple of factors, both growth on a disciplined basis and also profitability. What we're really focused on is trying to make sure that we're doing about 75% of that production originated for sale, making sure that we keep our operations and our team sharp and focused around expense management. And our view is, you know, we have lots of opportunity here over time as we kind of widen the net across the footprint for growth.
Okay. And that 70 basis point expansion in your gain on sale margin, was that gradual throughout the quarter, the increase?
Well, I think some of it, it's a couple different things. Ron can go into some details as well. I think part of it is, you know, the benefit of increasing loss pipeline. Some of it is obviously some pricing opportunities as you had dips intra-quarter for us to widen margins selectively. There are several contributing factors, but I would say it's going back towards the trend that you would have seen historically out of classic Umpqua, where the real focus is on making sure that we have profitable and sustainable growth.
Okay. So is it fair to say that it's somewhat impacted by the mix with the refi having a higher gain on sale margin, and since that was a higher portion of the mix than in past quarters, that also benefited?
That has something. I mean, I think the short answer is yes, mix does have a benefit, and you're right that we would see enhanced profitability there. I think the other issue is, you know, again, in a rate environment that would be similar to today with that lock pipeline staying where it is, we think that we're looking at a continuation of the trend that you saw in the first quarter for the foreseeable next couple months or so, certainly.
Okay. And if my calculations are correct, then purchase volume was only down 10%, which was surprising. I would have thought that there would have been more of a seasonal dip in that. Do you think that we could see that move up quite a bit as we head into the spring season?
Well, I think we're definitely, I mean, we are moving into purchase season. It's a little interesting for companies positioned where we are across our five states because, you know, the winter of 2014 and 15 was kind of the winter that never was, right? So we saw better purchase activity in points north than we typically would see because people were kind of out and about, and it was an ordinary day in the life. So we think purchase stayed up, to your point. It was more robust than we typically would see at this time of year. I think it all depends on rates, Jackie. I think if rates stay where they are, you know, I think you'd still see about a 60-40 refi to purchase type volume in the second quarter, which was inverse of where we were a couple quarters ago. But anywhere, you know, I think anywhere between 40 and 50% in terms of refi will work just fine for us.
Okay.
It's
going to
be pretty balanced over the course of the next quarter or two.
And are you seeing any of your markets, any of the metro areas where supply is constraining in terms of purchasers?
Yeah, increasingly so. I mean, there are more lookers than there is available inventory for people. It's obviously creating, you know, some good price appreciation. And we're actually seeing some pretty interesting trends now around, you know, people who may have stayed put through the downdraft in the economy, starting to look for not just kind of a one-step move-up, but multiple-step move-ups in their next purchase. So I think it's having some impacts on the overall size of the average loan demand that we're looking at as well, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But it's different than it has been coming out of other cycles.
Okay. And just really broadly, have you done any work or had any thoughts on I don't want to say wasted time of your lenders, because obviously when they're working, it's not wasted, but just borrowers who are putting in multiple offers and continue to be, rejected. Is that starting to take a toll on just efficiency and production?
You know, it does a bit. We're mindful of that. We watch very closely kind of all of our pull-through numbers because clearly one of the issues you worry about in terms of fallout is, do you have a bunch of, you know, folks who are just window shopping but aren't necessarily closing, particularly if you get to that app stage. But we're seeing, you know, our pull-through rates have stayed really strong. I think part of it is the markets that we're in. You know, we still are very focused in a lot of what I would characterize as, you know, suburban, non-metro type markets. And the pull-through that we've typically seen in those markets has stayed in the mid 80% range, which is right where it's been over the course of the last many years.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for all the color. It was wonderful.
We'll take our next question from Jared Shaw with Wells Fargo Securities.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for the call. Just a question on the non-performers. Actually, first we could go, what was the balance of the covered loans at the end of the quarter, and then the allowance assigned for those covered loans and the net charge-offs coming from the covered loans?
And again, we combine that because by the end of the quarter, two of the three portfolios hit the expiration of the charge-off, or sorry, the loss share for the commercial side of the house. So what we have left is just a little over $100 million, which will move off of covered status by the end of Q2, and that was related to the Nevada security deal from June of 2010. In terms of the allowance of that, as we showed last quarter, fairly static, so no significant change in the level of reserve for it, nor with the provision from quarter to quarter.
Okay. And then when you had mentioned an expected reduction in NPAs going into the second quarter, is that due to curing of the non-performers or through charge-offs?
No, this is Mark, Jared. It's actually a good thing. It's sales of two or three large OREO properties and resolution of a large credit that should all happen in the second quarter with very little in the way of charge-offs with those resolutions.
Okay, great. And then just finally, following up, I guess, on Jackie's question on the mortgage sales. So you think that the gain on sale margin could be sustained going into second quarter here at these higher levels?
Yeah, we've looked at that extensively. I think if rates stay where they are, we continue to hold up our lock pipeline, we think we'll be stable in terms of kind of the linked quarter gain on sale expectations.
Great. Thank you very much.
And we'll take our next question from Steven Alexopoulos with J.P. Morgan.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Or good afternoon in New York.
Good afternoon in New York.
Yeah. That is true. Can you talk about the strategic decision to sell the $73 million of resi mortgage loans in the quarter?
Sure. This is Ron. Similar to the last couple quarters, it's just about managing overall interest rate risk. These are longer-term fixed loans within the portfolio.
And then following up on the strong growth in multifamily this quarter, can you talk about the appetite to grow the overall commercial real estate bucket and what your overall thoughts here on managing that concentration risk of CRE?
Hey, Stephen, it's Cort. Relative to multifamily, we just kind of look at it quarter to quarter. I mean, we do run off some in the quarter. You know, we had some runoff. We'd run off about $50 million a month in multifamily. Once again, we have not increased the overall percentage in the overall portfolio, so we look at it pretty closely. Relative to commercial real estate, we don't feel that we're overly concentrated in commercial real estate. I might let Mark comment on that if you'd like. You know, we do a different type of real estate than the bank had done in the past. You know, we deal with a tier one real estate type customer. We see a lot of velocity in that portfolio also. These are shorter-term value-add kind of deals. We don't do a lot of fixed rate in the commercial real estate portfolio proper type financing. So there's high velocity. Every 18 to 24 months, those deals roll through to non-recourse life company type finance, which is where it needs to be and off our balance sheet. So we have an appetite for it because we have velocity in both the multifamily and the more traditional commercial real estate portfolios.
Okay, got you. And then shifting gears, outside of realizing the expected $87 million of cost saves, how should we think about organic growth of expenses of the core business, given just the investments that you're making?
Yeah, just from the core business, it's going to be consistent with past annual trends in that 2 to 3% range.
Okay, perfect. And Ron, just one technical question. The cost of interest-bearing deposits has just drifted up over the last few quarters. I'm just curious why that's the case, given you seem to have excess deposits today.
Strong deposit growth, but also you see some mix change impacting that. So if you look at the total cost of total deposits, you'll see it flat, if not down. And I'd say overall, for interest bearing, it's just bouncing along across the bottom.
Okay, got it. Okay, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from David Long with Raymond James.
Hey, guys.
Hey, morning, Dave.
You guys talked a lot about the expense rationalization from the acquisitions, but let's look at the other side, at the revenue side. What color can you provide us with revenue synergies that have been realized from the Sterling acquisition to date, and then what's your outlook over the next few quarters?
This is Ray.
Well, let me hit the big buttons. Obviously, what Greg has talked to you about on the consumer side on home mortgage has gone up dramatically. That's one area. The second area that's gone up also in Greg's got the numbers on top of his head. I think it's a percentage of growth. I think it was a 58% or 58% in our consumer lending throughout the stores and the network, that the work that he's done with his execs on not only training our people in the stores to originate the loans, get them processed, but that has been another major win for the company, and that has upside for us as well. So I think from a revenue point of view, those are the two biggest areas that we're seeing incremental revenue growth coming from.
Okay, and with the closing of the integration, does that accelerate? Are there more initiatives that you can take on at this point, or has everything already sort of been started?
Well, you know, the home lending side is, you know, that, you know, you tell me what rates are going to be, and I'll tell you how well we're going to do. On the consumer side, yes, I think we have an upside on that because it really is just, you know, really come out of the gate. I think we have significant upside on the overall consumer lending portfolio growth opportunity that we have. So, yeah, you know, the interesting thing about this whole integration as we look back at it, and believe me, guys, we do postmortem on just about everything we do around here to make sure that we don't lose track of the good things that are going on and make sure we minimize the things that didn't work out so well. But I can tell you that now that with the conversion behind us, and this is important, because when I said earlier, this is the major hurdle that was stopping us or you know, not preventing us from doing all the things that we want to get on with growing the business, optimizing revenues, getting that efficiency ratio down below 60%. All of that now is open. That gate is now opened. So we realize the pressure is on us. Now that there's no hurdle for us to overcome, and, you know, let's pray there's no unforeseen something bad that happens in the economy or in Europe or whatever. But, I mean, the company couldn't be better positioned. And if you look back at these numbers that these fellows are sharing with you on growth, on what we, you know, through the conversion, through the integration, and then have the strong organic growth we've had, I'd have to say that we've had our bumps on some of the things on the integration, but I'd say overall, this has been a very, very big success for our company, one that all of us are very, very proud of.
Great. Thanks for the call, Ray.
And at this time, there are no other questions in queue. I'll turn it back to our presenters for any closing remarks.
Okay. I want to thank everyone for their interest in Umpqua Holdings and attendance on the call today. This will conclude the call. Goodbye.
That does conclude today's conference call. We appreciate your participation.